You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Tuesday, 22nd April. Happy 25th wedding anniversary to my wife. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Pietie Radin, hey, Serenia Capital Advisors. The energy trade, it's been a good trade, but now lower GDP. Trump loves coal. He wants to drill, baby, drill, which pushes oil lower. Is that energy trade perhaps over? Steve Brooks from Baldwin Properties. They get 1 billion rand funding from the International Finance Corporation. And Reza Hendrickse from PPS Investments. Where are they positioning global portfolios in this volatile world? This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. Decision to introduce VAT rate change cannot be interdicted at this stage. Relief sought by DA and EFF lacks merit. This is according to the finance minister. Reuters, Trump says Powell's termination cannot come fast enough. Turkey tried that and it went poor. Morning markets. US was red. S&P down 2.4%. NASDAQ off 2.5%. And the 10-year is higher at 4.4%. The East is mostly red. Sydney's up 0.33%. Tokyo down 0.1%. Hong Kong 0.5%. Tencent also 0.5% lower. Commodities mostly green. Gold futures 3,498. Brent 66.62. Platinum 9.75. Palladium is down 9.38. The rand is 18.66. Bitcoin 88,100. Top 40 opening call. Tricky to call after a long weekend. I've got it mostly flat, maybe a little bit to the green.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Joining now with Pietie Radin. You find him, of course, Herenia Capital Advisors. Pietie, appreciate the early morning time. One of the trades of the, I suppose we could almost say a trade of the pandemic, certainly that's when it really came to life, has been energy. Most perhaps best reflected by the energy select sector ETF, XLE. But with lower global GDP, maybe not recessions, but certainly lower, we've got Trump all over coal. He wants to drill for oil, which pushes prices lower. Is the energy trade perhaps over?
Oh, morning, Simon. And it's hard for me to admit. It's hard for me to accept. So personally, I'm not ready to let go of it yet.
Yeah.
I still think that we continue to see a shift from Western dominating economies to an Eastern dominating economy, and with that we see positive energy prices or energy prices going up, and also think we see a transition into away from solar and wind and into nuclear, right? So we're still backing uranium in a very big way. We still think that that's really the future of what green energy is going to be. It's tough to let go of the oil trade, but I suppose that's one that we're going to have to learn to let go of relatively soon, because oil just seems to be under too much pressure, man. And more drilling and that kind of stuff is going to bring more supply to the market, and unless we see significant uptick in demand, it becomes difficult to see how the oil price is going to go higher. And this is hard to let go of because it's something that during the pandemic we did really well on. There's been a bit of a saga with Sasol. Every time you look at Sasol, you think, wow, it's really cheap, but it just keeps getting cheaper. So I'm not at this stage bailing out of, running away from the sector, but maybe reaching a point where I'm not going to be adding any more to it. Maybe not to, the likes of Sasol, for example. Mm-hmm. But when looking at things like sustainable energy, the focus is still very much on nuclear for us.
And I take your point on that. And to be clear, I mean, if we decide to build a nuclear power plant, this is not a 3.5-year decision. And I pick 3.5 years because that's broadly Trump's remaining time in office. Well, a little over 3.5. These are longer term decisions that perhaps might be short term geopolitically influenced, but longer term are actually just base business decisions.
Yeah, and I think you're quite right. I mean, it takes 5 to 10 years, sometimes longer, to build a nuclear power station. Mm. And the cheapest part of that equation is the fuel. So the price of fuel can tenfold, and it will still be by far the cheapest way of producing energy. And what's interesting is we see that a lot of European countries are starting to kind of take the mothballs out and dust off old nuclear power stations that they want to recommission. And we see a lot of the Eastern countries, you know, India, China, Russia,
Vietnam,
these guys are all building new power stations. So I think that there's going to be a big push over the next, let's say, couple of decades, which is a long time if you think about it. But man, I don't know, we're getting older now. Decades are starting to feel shorter and shorter. So it's not really that much time, right?
Yeah.
Before I think we see that transition really into nuclear energy. It's the only thing that really makes any sense from a sustainability perspective. So that's a trade that we've been backing for a while. We'll continue to back that. Oil, maybe it's cyclical. I don't know. It's over the last year or so, it's caused nothing but pain for me. And it's tough to let go of the idea that the oil trade is going to come back. But I suppose this is what we're in markets for. Sometimes you've got to eat your hat and move on.
Well, here's two fun facts. Oil a year ago, was $90. I'd forgotten that. $90. It's now 66. And, of course, the U.S. is also getting the moth out of Three Mile Island. So, yep, the nuclear is certainly still coming back. We'll leave that there. Peter Radenhurst, Serenia Capital Advisors. That's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. The energy trade, is it over? Maybe in patches, but broadly, perhaps not at all. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Give you money, smoother returns for Stanlib Asset Management. The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Steve Brooks, CEO, Baldwin Properties. Steve, appreciate the time. Tuesday, you made an announcement, the International Finance Corporation, essentially investing 1 billion rand in a funding deal into Baldwin. First question is, this is funding. This is not an equity position or something they're taking. Is this essentially a loan arrangement?
It's a straightforward loan. That's very good terms. And yes, it's at this stage, we're viewing it as an incredible commitment from IFC to putting infrastructure into the east of Pretoria.
I want to come to the east of Pretoria. You talk about that commitment. You and I, when we chat, you talk around your design for greater efficiencies, your greening of the homes, energy, water consumption. You've had the accolades. This is another stamp on that.
Yeah, Simon, we are extremely proud. You know, it's been a lifelong career opportunity for me, and I'm dedicated to leaving a mark on this earth and doing responsible buildings for our clients. It's the way of the future. I'm a board member of the Green Building Council, do a lot of good work with them, and it does make a difference. You know, we're now declaring the entire precinct a green precinct. It's my next ambitious move. So we're very, really committed to this.
This IFC is the Mooikloof Smart City Development. That's in Shwani. How many apartments is that going to be ultimately? I know you build in stages, but you often end up with really big precincts.
Yeah, we're going to end up somewhere between 12 and 14,000 apartments. Hmm. But we've got some really good news. We've got a fantastic shopping center coming called Green Gate, which is being developed by Dorp Street, who are absolute experts at this, with some really, really good tenants. They're fully tenanted. That's starting now. And then we've also very successfully got the host hospital license for the site right next to the end of the suburb that we're developing. And we are busy planning a hospital and a whole lot of medical. Baldwin will participate as project managers. And we've got some fantastic partners, and they've just been awarded the license.
12 to 14,000 apartments, that is a lot of apartments. Assuming everything goes according to plan, and there's a lot of T's and C's in that statement, but let's assume it does. What sort of timeline is that size of a development from start to finish?
You know, Simon, as you know, depending on Mr. Trump and all the people in macroeconomics, you know, somewhere between 10 and 15 years.
The other important point, and it often gets lost in these type of stories. I mean, you're creating communities, shopping centers, hospitals, et cetera, but this is more than that. This is job creation. I talk with Dr. Rudolf Buerter often. He says building is the best way to get jobs. It's economic growth. It's local supply chain. It's hugely important for the community and the broader economy.
I had a fantastic call with our president a few years back, and he said to me, you know, young man, which I always appreciate, I've just turned 60. And he said to me, what can you do to help? And I said, Mr. President, infrastructure.
Yeah.
You know, you bring infrastructure, don't worry about Baldwin, we'll follow, you know, and that's the big catalyst is infrastructure, then obviously building. And then the other big thing we've done, which is a big change in Baldwin, is my commitment to sport.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a fantastic sport complex coming up there, which all the people feed into. And we've already started, and we've had tremendous feedback for it. It's a humble beginning, meaning we've just started with a few paddle courts.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to grow into much more than that. And that also shows Baldwin's commitment to the community and the upliftment of people.
You mentioned infrastructure there. One of the, I don't know if challenges is the right word, but is those bulk services infrastructures, particularly with new developments that Baldwin does, are you finding sort of more support, more engagement with the relevant municipalities?
Yes, we are. You know, everybody likes to knock the municipalities, but we've got a fantastic general manager in the area, and he's really working well with the municipality. It isn't easy.
Mm-hmm.
It does have its problems, but we put our head down, and we are determined to improve the infrastructure, which we've already started with.
We'll leave it there. Steve Brooks, CEO of Baldwin Properties, on their R1 billion funding deal with International Finance Corporation. Steve, always appreciate the time. The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Stanlib Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Risa Hendricks. You find him, of course, at PPS Investments. Risa, appreciate the time. A recent note you put out starts with January IMF upgrade to global growth forecasts to 3.3%. I had forgotten about that and all the chaos that's followed. The reality is that U.S. tariffs, we're probably heading into maybe not a recession, but certainly a slowdown in global growth, particularly in the more export-reliant economies. Things have changed a lot since that January IMF statement.
That's right, Simon. Good morning and thanks for having me. I mean, how quickly things change. So you're right. I mean, that does seem like an ill-timed maybe upgrade, but I mean, who could have seen what was coming down the pike? I mean, if one looks at what the Fed nowcast model is showing, the Atlanta Fed, their sort of nowcast GDP model is showing that we are already in a contraction. We are potentially going to see a quarter of negative GDP growth. So it does seem, as you mentioned, that these tariffs are going to have an impact on growth, even if it's just from an uncertainty perspective, because people are holding back not only spending, but also investment plans. And then potentially also some impact on inflation. And we saw the Fed just recently also make some comments to that effect.
And that's the challenge for central bankers. I mean, we've got potentially slowing growth. We've got potentially rising inflation. That is two of the three legs of stagflation, which is a word which I think gets thrown around with too much ease and abandon. But this is going to be a hard needle to thread for central bankers the world over.
That's right, because it's so difficult. How can one justify cutting rates when inflation is high and rising? And then any sort of stimulus that could potentially come about from the fiscal side, that is arguably also going to add to inflation. So one is really stuck in a situation where there's not much that can be done about that stagflation type of scenario that does seem quite likely.
I want to touch on our own SARB in a moment. Before I do, global bonds, you say you have been overweight global bonds. The US 10-year, as sort of the benchmark I use, I mean, it was, 4.5% just recently. It's coming down from that. Is that still attractive, particularly if you think that with bonds, it's the yield down, price up formula?
Yes. So, I mean, we saw the 10-year yield come all the way back to below 4. And so that overweight that we've had in portfolios, it worked out really well. We did, however, start to get quite nervous about the fact that you've got global investors starting to shun U.S. assets. Mm. You've got this economic warfare going on, and who knows how that might pan out, and it could easily impact people's willingness and desire to hold U.S. treasuries. So we have actually trimmed that back a little bit. And that was right before the U.S. treasury yield spiked back up above 4 quite sharply. It's now back about 4, but it is something that we are less constructive on than what we might have been at the start of the year for reasons that you've mentioned, and also just this unwillingness from, I think, global investors to want to be overexposed to U.S. assets.
As somebody who watches bonds,
sort of keep, I was going to say half an eye, and that's not even true. I keep a tenth of an eye on bonds because they move so slowly. That move from sub 4 to over 4.5 in the US 10-year was something that I've never seen before. That was quite an astounding move.
It was an extremely sharp move. If one looks at the volatility of bonds, you've got the move index. But I mean, that move itself, if one looked in the context of the past few decades, it's definitely one of the five, I would say, biggest moves we've ever seen. So that was quite scary. And what it actually did, it is it prompted Trump to sort of backtrack temporarily on that very hostile path that he was on. So I mean, it even spooked, I would say, Trump.
Yeah, it reminds me of Liz Truss when the UK gilt did pretty much the same and saw her reverse as well. Bringing it home, you're looking for more, better, perhaps GDP growth in South Africa, but only modestly so, and frankly, still off a very low base.
That's right. I mean, structurally, we are still a low growth economy. And so long term, it's very difficult to get too excited. But I think just cyclically coming off that low base and seeing that things are starting to fall in place, we do expect modestly higher growth. We're not thinking 2-3% plus, but certainly better than what we've seen over the past decade on average.
And does that give, because our inflation still remains towards the bottom end of the target, the 3-6%. The governor, of course, always refers to the mid-range, the 4.5. We're just above 3. Does it give Saab, notwithstanding the conversation we had a moment ago about central bankers, does that give Saab space to give us some rate cuts in the year?
You would think so. I mean, with inflation where it is, there certainly is plenty of scope for the Saab to cut. What I do expect, though, is for them to continue just sort of raising the point that global risks are high and rising. And that, of course, could potentially impact the rand. But I mean, there's always this issue of, yes, you've got the local inflation does seem to be quite low, but the Saab is certainly going to be worried about what it is seeing globally. And so it's going to potentially move slower. But having said that, there is scope to cut, and we do expect more cuts to come over the course of this year.
Yeah, of course. I think there's a Fed meeting, I think it's 7 May, and then Saab at the end of May. Local bonds, I mean, they've obviously, and concerns, I mean, global concerns have put pressure on them. Government of National Unity concerns have put pressure on them. What's your reading on our local bond market at the moment?
So we've come into the year with an underweight position to South African bonds, and that was quite well timed. After we saw that very strong rally last year, we decided to take a little bit off. And just expecting this budget process to challenging it, it was going to be the first one under the GNU. And we didn't know exactly how it was going to play out. But I mean, it certainly we did feel vindicated when we saw some of the challenges come about. Our view is that, I mean, we all know that there are fiscal risks locally. We think that after the GNU, after the budget saga, we are relieved that it does seem as though the GNU partners want to work together. I mean, the yields have been all over the place. As you mentioned, it's largely been driven by global dynamics. We think, therefore, that the local dynamics have sort of calmed down and we're less concerned there. But we are still concerned about the global drivers. And so we aren't overexcited. We aren't excited about local bonds. We're happy with that underweight. Mm-hmm. But I mean, if we do see significant weakness, we will, of course, add. The other thing I think worth mentioning is just the dollar dynamics, which I think is also just quite a big driver to all asset classes globally, including SA bonds.
Yeah, absolutely. That dollar index has moved from, I think it was around 109 down to below 100. We leave it there. Reeza Hendricks, PPS Investments, appreciate the insights.
That's it for today. Back on Thursday, our last show, we were chatting with Meryl Pick from Old Mutual Investment Group. We're talking around the gold price and its potential to get to 4,500. We've got Goldman Sachs calling that number. Meryl has done some math on it and looking at the two previous sort of crises, that being pandemic, that being 08. And the moves we saw there certainly do potentially take it to that 4,500 target. We asked you if you thought gold could get there. Almost half said, you never know with gold. A third said, yep, easy enough. And we're now, frankly, little under $1,000 away. Sorry, little over. The rest said, no, it's a crazy call. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us a positive rating and an awesome review in your podcatcher of choice. We'll chat again tomorrow on South Africans becoming more credit savvy.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.